You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Seconds. Oh, and a chance there. I mean, really.
He gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually.
I think we just got to be composed and, not kind of get into that, bull.
That's right. We can't have anyone freak out there, okay? We got to keep our composure.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Brough, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program, right off the hop. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, that's what you're waiting for. It is a Thursday. It is NFL draft day. Happy draft day to all those that celebrate. There's a bunch of stuff that we need to get into. So we've got the NFL draft. We've got the NBA playoffs. Of course, we've got the NHL playoffs. The Canucks traveled to Nashville yesterday. There was a brief media availability. It was nice that the Canucks made Teddy Bluger and Noah Juulsen available to the media yesterday. I'm sure the throngs of media in Nashville were excited to talk to them.
That was a big one. That was Teddy Bluger's return to Nashville. He played a game there once.
Teddy, do you remember it here? Kinda.
Yeah.
Kinda do. We got a lot to get into on the show today, though. All joking aside, serious business here. Guest list begins at Nick at 6:30. Nick Shook is going to join us. NFL.com, we will preview tonight's NFL draft, where there's going to be a huge run on quarterbacks right off the hop. That's going to be very exciting. We'll talk to Nick about everything that's going on in the first three picks, three quarterbacks.
Do you remember when the Canucks would miss the playoffs, how big a deal this would be to us? Yeah. What are the Seahawks going to do?
I did all my prep this morning.
Yeah.
A quarterback from North Carolina? My God, I didn't even know they played football. Anyway, Nick Shook is going to join us at 6:30 to talk a little NFL draft. 7 o'clock, Adnan Virk, MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Pod. I've decided that I'm going to curate one specific film question for Adnan every week because he is truly a cinephile.
That's Ask him about Civil War.
You saw Civil War.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, did you like Jesse Plemons' red glasses?
Yeah, he was only in one scene, but it was probably like the most intense
he's
scene
He's only
of
in
the
one
movie.
Scene?
Yeah.
Oh, because in the trailer, it makes it seem like he's a key part of that
movie. Well, because he's a big actor now. And he actually, fun fact, he did it very last minute. He wasn't supposed to be in the movie, but then the guy that was supposed to do his role pulled out, and his wife, who of course is in the stars in the film, she's like, hey, yo, you should do this role.
Kristen Dunst.
Yes.
Yes. See, I know things.
Yeah.
So Adnan's going to join us at 7 o'clock. 7:30.
She was like, this script reminds me of Bring It On.
Yeah, it's really lighthearted and fun.
But it's got an edge to it. Like, Bring It On.
I want to ask Adnan about Vladdy.
Sure, we can do that, too. You know what?
What are the numbers
on? We can do whatever we want. It's our show.
What are the numbers on Vladdy right now? And Vladdy, hey, that rhymes with Laddie. The Blue Jays' biggest fan. 219, three homers, 9 RBIs.
One crippling error.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like,
but at least he's
that
great.
Two games ago?
At least he's great.
Just like Laddie.
Yeah.
Crippling errors all over the place.
Every time he's out there. 7:30. Katie Strang's going to join the show from The Athletic. Investigative journalist Katie Strang. We're going to talk about Alex Marullo. Morello. Is it Morello or Marullo? I never know.
Morello.
It looks like it's Alex Morello. We're going to talk about the Arizona Coyotes, the now defunct, now inactive Arizona Coyotes, and all of her coverage. And she wrote another piece recently this week about someone needs to tell Alex Morello that the Arizona Coyotes are gone because he seemingly isn't willing to admit that. So we'll talk to Katie Strang at 7:30.
Her piece basically gets to the crux of my question, one of my big questions. Is the NHL really going to give this guy another franchise? Like, I know that's the deal he arranged, but like, like, there's no way they're going to do that, are they? This is like they can't. Like, he's hated there.
Right. He has very, it's seemingly unsavory business practices, like not paying his vendors and lenders. So we'll talk to Katie about all that at 7:30. Excited to get her back on the show. One of the best journalists working right now in the world of Sprots. 8 o'clock, the Drancer, Thomas Drance from The Athletic Vancouver. He'll be joining us, I believe, live from Nashville, where he made the trek yesterday. So we'll talk to him. Start previewing game 3 of the series between the Canucks and the Preds. A reminder for those not familiar with the schedule, extra day off in this series. So the Canucks and Preds don't play again until Friday. Speaking of Friday, we are giving away what we learned, best what we learned today. We're giving away a pair of passes to the Canucks away game viewing party at Rogers Arena on Friday. You go to Rogers Arena at 4:30. You watch the game on the big screen. You also get a VIP skate from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. and club seats in a special Rogers section that includes snacks and refreshments. Snacks, Jason.
That's a pretty good prize package there.
Now, speaking of a watch party, and I'll mention this twice today, we're doing a watch party Sunday at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano. Go to thehollywoodtheater.ca for more information. We'll be putting stuff up on social media. Andy's been bugging me. Says you got to put more stuff up on social.
Yeah, Halford's doing the interesting strategy of not telling anyone about this watch party.
I'm playing it cool. I'm playing hard to get.
It's a secret party.
I'm playing
it's a secret.
You can skate at the Hollywood Theater before the game as well if you want. There's no ice there, but no. Go for it. So I'd wear your skate guards.
They might yell at you, but
don't wear them. Bring your rollerblades.
Yeah.
Play it cool. Hey, if whatever you guys want to do is cool with me. Anyway, the guest list, working in reverse. 8 o'clock, it's the Drancer. 7:30, it's Katie Strang. 7 o'clock, Adnan Virk. 6:30, it's Nick Shook. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance. Making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. As mentioned, yesterday was a travel day for the Vancouver Canucks as they headed to Nashville in anticipation of Friday's Game 3 at Bridgestone Arena against the Preds. I guess the one noteworthy thing of Rick Tocchet's media availability, which he did shortly after landing in Nashville, is that to nobody's surprise, the Canucks and Rick Tocchet have confirmed that Casey DeSmith will start in Game 3. There was no real surprise, again, no real shock. I don't even think there was any real question that DeSmith would get another game. The only real question is if he lays another egg, what do they do then? But you have to wait for Friday for that. Casey DeSmith will start in Game 3 on Friday. Rick Tocchet did have a couple of interesting things to say to the, I don't want to say throngs of media because it felt like five people were there, but two things in particular. One, embracing the villain role on the road. Now, as you know, Nashville is a very boisterous arena. They are eagerly anticipating this Game 3. They already have the Vancouver Canucks smash car. I don't know if everyone's familiar with this practice, but prior to every game, they put a big old car painted in the visiting team's colors and logos outside of Bridgestone Arena, and then they smash it because it's called Smashville, you know?
It's Rick Tocchet's car.
Right. You know, Nashville, yeah. Smashville.
Gotcha.
They're still doing that, car?
Yeah, I saw pictures of the car yesterday. So they really try and amp up the fans to hate the home team. And Rick Tocchet said, we should lean into being the villains. Here's what Rick Tocchet had to say on that. Ahead of Game 3 in Nashville on Friday, Rick Tocchet, Canucks head coach.
Love it. You know, I love getting booed and whatever. They don't throw, the Nashville's got great fans. They don't throw stuff at you, but... I do love the fact that sometimes it's nice to be the villain and somebody booing you. I think it brings out the best in certain guys. So use it to your advantage.
Now, there is going to be a lot of energy in the building going into Game 3. Tocchet also spoke about, guys, we're really just grasping at whatever Rick Tocchet said yesterday. He talked a lot about what to do facing the energy that Nashville had to face in Games 1 and Game 2 at Rogers Arena because it was very loud, it was very energetic, and talking about not losing your head, especially on the road, in the first 5 minutes of that road game on Friday, Game 3. Here's Rick Tocchet again from yesterday's media availability.
Well, you know, that first 5 minutes, especially in this building, it's crazy, and I think you got to use it to your advantage. You know, I think if you look at the coach's handbook, everybody says simplify. You know, I think advancing the puck, playing a simple game early is a smart way. You know, get a good hit in, good shot maybe. And I think if nothing happens exciting on your shift, it's okay. Like, you don't have to press the issue at the start. And stay disciplined. Sometimes when the crowd's loud and, you know, you tend to get a little overjuiced and take penalties. So I think being disciplined is a big key too.
It actually begs the question of who's going to come out stronger in game three, because Nashville is the home team. So sometimes you expect the home team to come out guns blazing. But remember how game two went. Canucks had the puck pretty much the whole time.
Except in the first minute when the Nashville Predators scored on their first quote-unquote shot on net.
But
I get what you're saying.
For most of the game, and it's the Canucks that were probably, you know, the Canucks are the angry team. The Canucks are the team that is looking to bounce back. So I'll be curious to see how the start goes. And this isn't just like hockey cliche stuff, because I think how the start goes is, and especially who scores first is going to be very important in this series. We've seen the Canucks not play with the lead very often in this series. They played with the lead for, 10 minutes after Dakota Joshua scored the second in in 12 seconds in game one. And in game two, they never played with the lead. And it was a problem because, you know, some teams, when they defend, have a certain strategy. With the LA Kings, they go into that 1-3-1, and they make it very difficult to gain access to the offensive zone. The Nashville Predators, not so much giving you trouble gaining access to the offensive zone, but once you have, it's hard to get pucks through to the net, as we saw. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to score first. The Canucks scored first a lot during the regular season, and you've seen that the Canucks are a pretty good team when they've got the lead as well. So the first goal, you know, this isn't just a cliche. It seems to be a pretty big deal.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you're parsing through all of the audio from yesterday and the very few media availabilities that were out there, there was a sense that this team is more than happy to get out on the road. And I think for a variety of reasons, like the energy in games one and games two was great. And I'm sure they fed off it. You could feel the players, you know, getting, as Rick Tocchet said, overjuiced, which I didn't know was a thing. But at the same time, that can work against you, right? There's a lot that goes into that in terms of being able to control your emotions and keep your energy in check and not do some of the things that Tocchet was speaking about there. Going out on the road, you do get to kind of rally the guys together. Tocchet alluded to the fact that all the boys went out for a team dinner yesterday. All of the distractions of life are gone. It's you in your hotel room and focusing on the task at hand. And now Nashville has to deal with all the stuff that you did have to deal with in games one and games two, right? So it'll be very interesting to see the start of the game.
Hey, just apropos of nothing.
Sure.
Have you seen that commercial about involving the Nashville Predator fan that sneaks in the catfish into the arena and then throws it on the ice? Have we all seen this commercial?
Yes.
Where the security guard kind of gives him the nod.
Yeah, like worst security guard in the world.
Yeah. Were you guys a little surprised that the NHL allowed that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like, did that strike you as something like they're almost encouraging people to bring stuff in?
Sneak stuff in?
To throw on the ice? Like, yeah. I know, I thought it was a good commercial. I thought it was funny. Like, it was funny. Like, the whole, you know, strapping the catfish your belly beforehand.
They should make it, they should do, like, multitudes of that commercial, and each one gets, like, progressively worse. Like, the guy has, like, a kitchen sink under it, and like, a water cooler.
A bunch of batteries.
Yeah. Like, I
get that. Watermelon.
I get that there's a couple traditions in the NHL. You got the catfish in Nashville, and this all kind of started with the octopus in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was just wondering if people thought that was surprising NHL allowed that, because it was kind of like, oh, you're encouraging people essentially to throw stuff on the ice and being like, that's what good fans do.
Yeah, security guard watching this.
Right? Like,
I could do that?
I want there someone to use that as their defense. They're like, but I saw it on the TV.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right? Like, couldn't you?
Yes.
I know it's on the back of a ticket. Like, I assume, I've never read all the fine print on the back of a ticket, but it's like probably like, don't throw stuff on the ice, right? Yeah. But it's like, but they made a commercial about it.
No, it's a good point because this is
also. They didn't make a commercial about throwing batteries on the ice, sir.
That's true. Or your beer.
What if the battery's in the catfish?
For a league that is usually like so risk averse, you would think that they would have shot that down right away. Leaning into something the least bit kind of controversial, that's interesting.
There's going to be like 50 catfish on the ice for game three now. And
people
are
gonna... weights and fish!
That's how you get them to fly.
Exactly.
Wow, that catfish really moved.
Yeah.
We got to clean up the ice now.
You remember it was a thing. I think someone took one to Pittsburgh when they played the Penguins in the Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
Someone made the track with the, and I hope the catfish was on ice at some point and not down his pants for the entire duration of like the flight and everything. But
sir, we're gonna get a lot of complaints.
Yeah, right. Spirit Airlines usually smells bad, but this is too much for even us. I know that it's been a thing, but I guess part of it is like the Preds haven't done anything in the playoffs really since that that Stanley Cup run. So I guarantee you one will hit the ice tonight. Let's put it that way.
We don't have to over-discuss it. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what happened last night in the NHL, because there are a few surprises.
Which Canadian team do you want to dance on first? Because both lost yesterday.
Well, all the road teams won. Do you remember the first part of the playoffs where all the home teams were winning, including in the NBA?
7-1 to start, and then, yeah, all of the NBA
teams.
Well,
let's start with, let's just go in chronological order here. The first game of the night was Boston and Toronto, and I watched most of this game. I had to take a bit of a break in the second period, and then as soon as I turned it back on in the third period, it was 2-1 for the Bruins. And the Leafs tied it up on kind of a lucky goal and ended up bouncing in off a couple of legs, including Lindholm's for the Bruins. And then, so the place was, you know, as jumping as Toronto gets. But people were excited, and rightly so. The Leafs had tied up that game, had a chance to win it. And then, I don't know what it was, 30 seconds later, the Bruins get a forecheck, and it was a good forecheck. And Danton Heinen really makes a really nice play down low for the Bruins. Gets the puck. Brad Marchand, like a shark, swims into a soft spot in the area. Gets a pass from Heinen, and Marchand rips just a perfect shot, top corner. And I don't know if everyone's been paying attention, but like Brad Marchand has been struggling a little bit to produce.
Mm-hmm. But he's also now the story of the series.
He's now, yeah. But anyway, he scores the goal. Beautiful shot. 3-2 Bruins. The Bruins end up winning the game 4-2. And, you know, like Marchand has broken a lot of hearts around the NHL. The guy, like, you have to tip your cap to him because he seems to show up in big games, and that was another big one for Brad Marchand as the Bruins take a 2-1 series lead over the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So I procured some audio from this one, and if you don't like the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is going to be delicious. So good, it's fattening. I want to play the empty netter first. This is Joe Bowen on the call after Marchand salts it away to make it 4-2 Bruins, giving them a 2-1 lead in the series.
40 seconds. Oh, and a chance there. I mean, really. The Leafs got taken down by Marchand, who ends up scoring into the empty net.
That was Bertuzzi. So, you know one thing? Brad Marchand has won this.
So that was a goal call, by the way. Without actually announcing that there was a goal scored, the Joe Bowen and company just decided to go off. Brad Marchand has played the better part of this series in the Leafs' heads. And then last night, the production finally came on the ice. So last night, to put it in perspective, Brad Marchand tied Cam Neely for most Bruins playoff goals ever in franchise history with 55. He also broke Cam Neely's record for game-winning playoff goals with 12. And he's firmly planted in the heads of the Maple Leafs. Now, Vancouver Canucks fans can be like, been there, done that. We've seen him do that here plenty of times. Good on you, Toronto, for getting to experience it. I'll give Sheldon Keefe credit. Very interesting spin on the Brad Marchand narrative. This is what he had to say post-game about the stuff Marchand gets away with. Note how he spins it.
Been in the league long enough, as you can see. He gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually, how it goes, we got to play through that. You got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. There's not one other player in the series that gets away with that, but he does. Because, it's an art, and he's elite at it.
He's elite at the art of cheating, which I love. That was a good spin at the end, because I think Keith realized he was going down the road of potentially complaining about referees. Mm-hmm. So then he brought it back to a compliment. It's like, you know, when you insult someone, finish with a compliment. Yep. And then everything will be okay.
Well, the Leafs have played right into his hands, really right from the beginning of the series. Mm-hmm. You know, the Leafs are always struggling to find their identity.
They're trying to chase an identity, you know, that they don't have. That's how I put it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And so they bring in guys like Bertuzzi and Domi. And I'm not saying those guys have been complete busts, because they haven't been. But in some ways, I wonder if those guys, you know, are overreacting to the challenge of playing Brad Marchand. They're kind of like, oh, yeah, you're going to do this? Well, we're going to do this. And they're like, we got caught for the penalty.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and, you know, I think that this Leafs team for so long has tried to almost be something it isn't. They've chased guys like Wayne Simmonds to give them some toughness. Obviously, Ryan Reeves has been brought in, and, you know, Domi and Bertuzzi, more so Bertuzzi. Like, a lot of people think Domi has been a bit of a hothead this series, although, you know, he's not his dad. He's not Ty Domi, yeah. Right? Like, but I don't know. They, you know, we all kind of snickered at how they rallied around Morgan Rielly getting suspended for what happened with Ridly Greig. Like, I don't know. I if the Leafs lose this series, like, is there any way that Keefe is back? Are we gonna do a whole nother off season about the Leafs, about whether or not they're actually going to make a major move?
No, he's what, gone.
I think Keefe will be fired. But like, what do they do with Marner?
Trade him to Pittsburgh.
Like, are we gonna go through this whole thing again with Toronto?
Probably, but I think that there might end up being some actual tangible change this time. Like, I've got it out there. Another one of my classic Halford hot takes. Can't wait for this one not to happen. But I mean, Marner to Pittsburgh is delicious, and it makes
it's not
so
a hot take.
Yeah, but how
it's a massive trade.
How could Pittsburgh afford that? How could Pittsburgh afford that?
They're gonna have to move a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
maybe someone has to go on long-term injured reserve. One of those kind of
like
things,
the Leafs, you know? To me would be
how's everybody's spleens doing?
Yeah, how are your spleens?
The Leafs to me are kind of like, you know, the Canucks are going to be interested in bringing in Chris Tanev, I think, in the offseason. Dollywall has reported the heck out of that.
Sure.
And I also wonder if they're going to go after a guy like Nikita Zadorov, right? Just we see what Zadorov is doing in the playoffs for the Canucks, and we all know that Toronto has to remake their blue line. Bradger living in Toronto, Bradger living new, Zadorov in Calgary. You know, I just wonder if there's, like, could it go all the way to the top with Brendan Shanahan?
Sure.
If the Leafs go out in the first round to Boston.
He's been on the job for 10 years. That's a long time with no tangible playoff results. Do you want to do Edmonton now before we go to break? Because that was another big one last night. Late last night in overtime, Anze Kopitar, the ageless wonder, Anze Kopitar, scored in overtime as the Los Angeles Kings, who, by the way, are playing in an absolute barn burner offensively of a series. So much for the picket fence and the 1-3-1. 5-4 in overtime. The Kings win, they snatch home ice advantage, and they even the series up at 1-1. Here's what it sounded like. Kopitar, game winner.
And Spence will take over. For Anderson and up the wall. Byfield tipped it, moving in, shot, score! Anze Kopitar, overtime winner! Game two, the series is tied at 1.
11 goals combined in the first game, 9 goals in the second, so 20 goals through 2 games in the Kings-Oilers series. And I'll say this, for as badly as the Kings played defensively in Game 1, and they weren't all that great in Game 2 either, they still gave up 4 goals, they found a way. And here's your new narrative, Stuart Skinner.
Yeah.
808 save percentage last night, 5 goals on, I believe it was 26 shots. Just not good enough, and that was always going to be a problem, because you're looking at it right now and you're saying, man, the Oilers really racked up some goals in those first 2 games. You know who else did? The LA Kings. 9 goals in 2 games. Like, that's a lot for a team that the style that they play doesn't really lend itself to a lot of offense. By the way, Anze Kopitar, who, you know, because he's been in the division and he's played the Canucks so many times, there's a level of, like, rivalry and dislike for him, right, for sure. But appreciating the fact that last night he scores an overtime goal in the year of our Lord, 2024. So Mark Marnego went back and looked, got a hold of me last night. His first playoff goal was 14 years ago. He's been doing this for 14 years. And his first ever playoff goal was an overtime winner in 2010 against The Vancouver Canucks. I went and watched it last night. So talk about a guy that just keeps going and keep plugging along. And now he's got the series tied 1-1 against the Oilers.
David Quinn got fired, too.
Yeah. Is that a mercy firing? Because, you know, when I listened to Mike Greer explain it yesterday, the general manager of the San Jose Sharks, who's buddies with David Quinn. They're BU guys together. They've been hanging out for the last couple of years. He said, it wasn't about our record, and it wasn't about our performance. And then I was like, well, Mike, what is it about then? And I do wonder if it was just like, we can't be this bad anymore. We just need to change something, and changing the head coach is the easiest thing to do. But that team was truly putrid in San Jose, and I felt bad for Quinn at times because that team had no talent and was designed to be bad, and God bless them, they were bad.
So there is NHL hockey on tonight, but there's also the NFL draft. We're going to talk with Nick Shook coming up next, but we've got a bunch of guests today, Nick Shook, Adnan Virk, Katie Strang. They're not really going to be talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs, but we can still talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Canucks in the part of the segment right after we talk to those people. So
backfilling.
Keep texting into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Butte in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com.
All Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com for more. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
We regret to announce the following layoffs, which I will read in alphabetical order.
Quinn, David.
That is all.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
You want to spread these goddamn ashes? You do it tomorrow.
No.
I'm serious.
No. Now then, are you going to read this prayer as your father asked you to?
No, I'm not.
6:33 on a Thursday, but not just any Thursday, NFL Draft Day Thursday. That was from the movie Ghostbusters.
I still haven't seen Draft Day.
You're not missing much. That was okay. The crux of the movie right there. The only, I retell that story by adding in, not today, Mom. It's draft day.
Find somebody that loves you the way Mike Halford loves the movie Draft Day.
He doesn't actually say draft. He doesn't say the name, the movie's title.
Which is too bad. He should.
That makes it, yeah. Right? It's like, who are you guys? Are you guys the Ghostbusters?
Well, they do say that.
Yeah, I know. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. Nick Shook from NFL.com is going to join us in just a moment here for some NFL Draft Day preview action. Hour one of this program is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street. In Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. Our good buddy Nick Shook from NFL.com joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Nick. How are you?
Fantastic. It's one of the best days of the year, fella. It's draft day, and I'm going to say it. I'm like them in the movie. I'm going to say it right now. It is draft day. Kevin Costner's probably nowhere to be found, but a bunch of GMs and coaches right now are all trying to make some big decisions that could change the course of their franchises. So let's get it rolling.
Okay, so at number one, there's no real surprise here. Caleb Williams is like minus 10,000 to be the first overall pick by the Chicago Bears. My question isn't even about Caleb Williams because I know he's an elite, dare I say, generational talent. My question is, how are the Bears not going to screw him up like they've screwed up other high-end draft picks at quarterback that they've taken in years prior?
It's actually the most important question, in my opinion, and part of why I was a little bit against them doing the whole deal that they did to get rid of Justin Fields and make this pick. But I think they've done enough to improve their situation to a place that, you know, was better than it was for at any point in Fields' time there, which is a better starting point more than anything. The offensive line is starting to round into form. It's a little bit better than it was before. They went and got Keenan Allen, a veteran receiver that they could definitely use. And, you know, they got OC Shane Waldron in there, which should help him as well. They went and signed DeAndre Swift, another running option after they, you know, at one point their backfield was just completely decimated last year before they got some of their talent back. So, and that defense really did start to come around last year and became their strength down the back stretch of the season to the point where they actually kind of flirted a little bit with a playoff spot. So it's not as bad as people might think for a team that's picking number one because it's not their pick to begin with. That is no guarantee that they are not going to mess up Caleb Williams, because the downside to drafting a quarterback when you are in a hot seat, maybe even lame duck year as a head coach, is the fact that you could only be there for potentially 1 year and send him into a cycle of resetting that then stunts the growth of a quarterback. There have been many that has happened to, whether it's the offensive coordinator or the head coach level, just ask Baker Mayfield and how that went for him in Cleveland. So that, the big goal there is to not expect too much and not hold Matt Eberflus accountable for any of the, or most of what, you know, eventually will be rookie hiccups on the part of Caleb Williams, and trying to maintain continuity while slowly building and improving this roster. They're still in a better spot than they were when they drafted Justin Fields.
I guess it should be noted that the Bears also have the number 9 pick. Could they go out and get yet another target for Caleb Williams? I've seen a few mock drafts with the Bears getting Washington Huskies receiver Rome Odunze.
Yeah, Rome's definitely, I think, going to be an option there. It's funny because I think we see a lot of variety in mock drafts from year to year, just for entertaining purposes, just for, you know, to get people to click on your mock draft or whatever. But this year, I truly feel like nobody has any idea of how it's going to shake out. Basically, from pick 6 on, it's where it gets crazy, because you feel like, you know, you're going to see 3 quarterbacks go off the board at 1, 2, and 3. The Cardinals are going to have Marvin Harrison Jr. fall into their lap unless they trade out for somebody else who wants to take a quarterback. And then from there, the Chargers could go a number of different directions. So if you trickle all the way down to 9 where the Bears are, you know, you're probably going to get a blue chip player regardless of position. It's just a matter of what do you think is most important. If you look at the Bears depth chart right now, they've got Keenan Allen, they got Tyler Scott, who made a nice little impact last year. They have DJ Moore. They no longer have Darnell Mooney. It gets a little thin behind those top 3. So they could definitely use another guy like a Rome Odunze or, you know, one of the LSU receivers. But at the same time, I would like to see them continue to invest in the offensive line. And if they decided to take one of these top offensive linemen, I'd be pretty excited for them, just because I think this is a draft that has a ton of talent at the position. We're going to look back and think a lot of quality players, if not all pros, you know, Pro Bowlers, or just guys that carve out Joel Batonio-like careers in this draft.
Is there any way we could see a big trade by one of these teams that's outside the top 3 to get into the top 3 for quarterbacks? I'm just wondering about the New York Giants, what they're going to do at number 6.
I think it's going to be very hard to get into the top 3. I think that if you're going to get in, it's going to be absolutely with the Patriots. And honestly, I mean, when was the last time the Patriots picked this high in the draft? I really don't think it's happened, maybe even in my lifetime. Maybe in the 90s, but it's been a long time, and they need a quarterback. And this is the time to make that decision. So I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody to get up there. The only thing I could really think of that might be able to do it would be the Vikings with their ammunition. And even then, they'd probably have to throw in, I mean, they have 11 and 23, and they would probably still have to throw in another relatively high value asset to get up into 3, as crazy as it sounds, because that's still a pretty big leap from, you know, from the teens 11 and 23 up into 3, especially when quarterback is on the table. So, and who knows if they need to move up to take a guy, you know, depending on how some of these other teams operate after the Patriots, they might be able to get, you know, their guy, JJ McCarthy, for example, they might be able to get him right away. But I think the Giants are going to be left on the outside looking in when it comes to the top 3 guys. Unless they love any of those guys, you know, whether it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, or Drake May, I don't think they should be really motivated to move up.
We're speaking with Nick Shook, talking NFL draft. Let's just talk about the quarterback tiers. Like, there's Caleb Williams and Is it fair to say that he's in a tier by himself?
Yeah. I don't look at him as the generational guy that some people might perceive him to be. Just because I think that there's things to fix in his game, which isn't the worst thing in the world. But he's above the next tier. Dean Daniels headlines the next tier. I think, you know, you could probably, if you wanted to really streamline it, you could probably put Caleb and Jaden in the same tier as, like, basically the guaranteed top two picks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could go with May, a player who did not have as strong of a finish to his collegiate career as Dean Daniels did. But it's a strange group because I am just not a buyer of what J.J. McCarthy is selling. And, you know, where do you put Michael Penix in this top five group? Because I would put Penix ahead of McCarthy, despite the fact that McCarthy is a quote-unquote winner, because he's obviously won a lot of football games in his collegiate career. So, I now that I think about it that way, you could probably put Caleb in his own tier. You could put Jaden Daniels in his own tier. You could put May in his own. Yeah, they could probably all be in their own. It's a weird group. I don't know. That's tough to decide, but I see what you're saying there. And if I really had to organize them, we would put them in William, Daniels, May in their own, in the same tier, but we knew who would go first, which is why Caleb would get his own. And then you put McCarthy and Penix in a tier below them, probably.
Yeah, it feels like Penix could go anywhere from, like, I don't know, 12th to all the way into the second round.
Yeah, which is a bummer. Because I think he's got a great arm and he had a good workout at the combine. I've tried to sort out and have not been able to come to a conclusion since February on why, as soon as I landed in Indianapolis, I was hearing about J.J. McCarthy. And, you know, within 12 hours, I couldn't escape the whole, just wait till he works out. He's going to be incredible. He's going to be more athletic than you realize, and he's going to surge up the draft board. I'm telling you, he's the biggest mover. And it's felt like that for 2 months, and I still don't quite understand why, because I think that he's not as good as folks believe he is. And I would put Penix ahead of him. And yet McCarthy feels like first people were saying he'd be a top 5 to 8 pick, right? And I think some mocks where he ends up to Minnesota at 11. They don't have to move up to get him. And that seems more realistic. But even then, I had a long debate with, you know, a colleague months ago about how there's no way J.J. McCarthy is a first-round pick. Just because when I look at him, I don't think he's a first-round talent. But at the same time, I don't know if Michael Penix, I think, is, because of that live arm and the athleticism and everything else. But I also, there was some concerns with how Michigan's defense gave him fit in the national title game that makes me wonder, you know, what's his acclimation going to be like in the NFL? What's the learning curve going to be like for him? I think both end up going in the first round, but it is very intriguing to see where Penix will go because of his injury history and because of a little bit of inconsistency. I still feel more confident than him than I do McCarthy.
Is McCarthy like the perfect storm of hype? Because they won a national title, and then his coach leaves to go to the NFL, and then while the coach is doing that, he tells everyone that'll listen that McCarthy's amazing and is going to be an unbelievable NFL quarterback. I'm almost getting like Zach Wilson draft year vibes, where I'm like I feel like the hype and the pomp and the circumstance is way, way, way outweighing what the actual player is. But I've also seen it happen before, so I know it could happen again. Is that what's happening a bit with McCarthy right now?
Yeah, I would trust your gut on that. And you have the recency of the Zach Wilson experience to kind of refer to when you're trying to parse through all this information, right? Because, look, J.J. McCarthy is, in a way, what Jim Harbaugh was as a quarterback. So, of course, he's going to go to the NFL and tell everybody he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. Because they were very close and the entire time he was there. He obviously won in, you know, their first national title together and only national title together in Michigan. And, you know, he has every reason in the world to hype the kid up because he is a winner. You know, he's won a lot of football games. I don't take that away from him. But there have been a lot of winners in college football who have not gone on to successful professional careers in the NFL. And what you do when you're drafting quarterbacks is you're drafting for traits and projection. And the arm accuracy and arm strength and everything else, it just doesn't seem to be there for me. It's just uneven. It's not consistent. He is athletic. He can move. He can scramble for a third or for a first down on 3rd and 8. He can. But he feels to me a lot like another guy who kind of rode this wave because of the desperation that is always associated with teams selecting quarterbacks And that is, he feels to me like Christian Ponder 2.0. He just, I watch highlights of Ponder, and I just to refresh my memory, because I remember his collegiate and professional career. I went back and refreshed my memory, and I was like, yeah, I see a lot of McCarthy in him. And we all know how that career panned out in the NFL, and he was a first-round pick as well. That's just what it feels like. I hope the same thing doesn't happen to Minnesota that happened with Ponder, but that's just my gut feeling is that, and I think a lot of it has to do with the way that McCarthy is entering the NFL. He's coming off of a national title, one amid a ton of scrutiny and criticism because of their sign-stealing operation and all this other stuff, and their outspoken coach who leaves to the NFL. It's the perfect storm, just like you said. It's the perfect storm to build a hype train that, you know, really propels him up the board. It's like my one buddy said, he goes, I don't know who J.J. McCarthy's PR team is, but they're doing a hell of a job right now.
And the draft is in Detroit, the Michigan kid. Oh, man, the stories write themselves. The NFL draft goes tonight, first round anyway. Tonight, 5 o'clock our time from Detroit, as mentioned. Nick, thank you very much for doing this. It is greatly appreciated. Enjoy tonight. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, enjoy, guys. Looking forward to it. Let's see how this this thing shakes out. I think we're in for a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of interesting picks once we get past about 6 in this draft. So enjoy.
Right on. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it, bud. That's Nick Shook from NFL.com here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
I like how the Bears are using the hype around Caleb Williams in the draft to announce that we want money for a new stadium.
Yeah, that was the other thing that came out, right? I was reading that on the old ESPN this morning. Yeah. A $5 billion proposal for a new stadium.
It does look cool, though.
They want a dome.
Yeah, well, the rent, yeah. The plan is to build a new dome stadium right next to Soldier Field, and then they tear down Soldier Field and turn it into a park, essentially. So
is that kind of counterintuitive to like the history and the storied franchise that is the Chicago Bears, involved in so many like terrible weather games because of their their geographical location? I mean, that's part of the thing, right? You go to Chicago in the winter and the weather's terrible.
Yeah, it's part of it, I guess.
That's why they won't do it.
But they didn't have domes a lot of the time.
Wow,
back
that's
then,
true.
Right? Like now it's about, you know, making
like Soldier
sure.
Soldier Field is one of the most iconic football stadiums.
I think it's become less so since they did that big renovation that made
true.
It look like. Well, I remember my first ever glimpse of Soldier Field back in the day. I was like, whoa, that place is incredible with the columns and everything. And I think they're gonna try and like keep coming some of that stuff in the park, like it'll still be there, but at any rate, whatever, it's not like there's been all sorts of stuff around the Bears stadium in Chicago, like other suburbs and areas have been trying to get the Bears out, and I think the city of Chicago really wants to keep the Bears right where they are.
Okay, let's dive back into the Stanley Cup playoffs now, because one game we did not mention from last night, another very, very interesting result out of Dallas, where the Dallas Stars are in massive trouble after a 3-1 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. And I know Laddie loved clipping this audio because it's his favorite player, Jack Eichel, with the empty netter to put it on ice in front of a stunned crowd in Dallas, who now find themselves down 0-2 in the series. No wins on home ice. They're going to Vegas for game 3. Here's what Eichel's clincher sounded like last night.
Backhand's a pass. Empty net goal for Eichel. And the Vegas Golden Knights are going to sweep the first 2 games here in Dallas.
Dallas is in massive trouble in that series, as predicted by one Mike Alford, who said that Vegas was going to win that series.
Because yeah, that was a good pick by you.
They dominated the regular season series. They were up 3-0 in the conference final last year before Dallas kind of made it interesting. There's sometimes teams just have your number. This is one of those, I think. Like, Dallas is a good team. As much as we joke about them being an irrelevant franchise and we don't find them interesting, we don't really care about them. I mean, they were the number one seed in the West. If this happens and they go out as meekly as it looks like they're going to go out right now. Now, the series is far from over, but being down 2-0 in a series when you haven't lost at home, as opposed to being down 2-0 in a series when you've blown both games at home to open a series, that's a big difference, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this, they're up against it now. The reality is, and I know they're not going to talk about it in these terms, but the Dallas Stars now have to beat the defending Stanley Cup champions in 4 of the next 5 games in this series. That's a tall tall order.
Yeah, and three of them will be in Vegas.
It's a huge, huge task. Mm-hmm. Now, hockey players will be like, we just got to take it one shift at a time, one game at a time, can't look too far in advance. But come on, they're human. They know that this is in, they're in real trouble here. And this, I mean, it was a great season for Dallas. They were a 50-plus win team. They had the first seed in the West. They loaded up at the deadline to get Chris Tanev, and it really looked like it clicked. Mm-hmm. They finished the season. I think it was an 8-game winning streak. And then everything on that final day of the regular season fell where they were like, uh-oh.
So what's the problem right now for Dallas? They can't score?
Yesterday, 21 shots on net, and Logan Thompson made 20 saves. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not that's not enough. Vegas, I watch that game. Vegas has dictated exactly how they want to play it. And here's the thing. There's not one particular way. Like, if Vegas wants to turn it into a north-south game, they can. Mm-hmm. If Vegas wants to slow it down, they can. They are just dictating the tempo of that series however they want. And the big guys, I mean, I think Robertson scored last night. Yeah, he did, actually. So, you know, it's not necessarily him, but they have not been able to stamp their authority on that series at all.
That Vegas team is just so deep. How did they fit it under the cap?
How did they do it?
Unbelievable work.
It's crazy. You absolutely have to hand it to them. I'll say this, too. when you're only putting up 4 goals of offense on Logan Thompson at home, and you're not getting shot totals north of 21, mm-hmm. you're not generating enough offense.
And right? You know what? You got to hand it to Vegas. They really clutched up in their final game of the regular season when they lost to Anaheim at home.
You can't,
And the Kings, those idiots.
By the way, you can't tell me the Vegas Golden Knights didn't throw that last game against Anaheim. You can't tell me. With all the other cheating that they've done, you can't tell me.
Totally. Of all the teams that would do it, how can you lose at home to Anaheim?
Because everyone was saying, oh, you can't say that. They didn't want to play Dallas in round one. I was like, you sure about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they seem pretty comfortable playing against Dallas in round one. Doesn't seem like a big problem to them at all. And now you're looking at it, and they are 2 wins away from jumping to the next round. Mm-hmm. Now, L.A. made it interesting last night. I watched that first game where the Oilers put up 7 goals of offense, and I thought, if the Kings are going to win game 2, they're going to have to make it low scoring. And this just goes to show how little I know about sports. The Kings got into a little bit of a track meet again. A 9-goal game, a 5-4 game. Kind of felt like it was out of their comfort zone, but they found a way to win in overtime with the Anze Kopitar goal. And I think, you know, the one thing that we did say about Edmonton going into these playoffs, and you would bring it up time and time again, was the goaltending. Was Stuart Skinner going to be the Achilles heel for this team? Would he be a problem? And right now, you'd have to say that of all the Oilers that are going, he's the one that's not, and it's a problem.
It's a combination of that and the blue line, right? Like, I think Darnell Nurse is one of the most overpaid players in the NHL. Like, he makes a ton of mistakes out there.
And CeCe and Bouchard have their flaws defensively.
Totally, yeah.
And they're relied upon a lot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, look, you've given up 9 goals to a Kings team that doesn't score that much.
Wait, if CeCe has his flaws defensively, then what does CeCe do?
He's just out. He skates. He forward and backwards.
What would you say that you do here?
Mm-hmm. Did you see, by the way, so Joe Bowen is the play-by-play announcer for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And for the record, I don't like the Leafs, but I think Joe Bowen is hilarious, and I enjoy his calls. I think they're really funny, and he has fun, and he's not afraid to speak his opinion. And he just tweeted out, was it last night, right? He tweeted out the idea of going to any sporting event to support the home team is to be proactive, give the team energy when they need it. Not sitting down waiting to be reactive. The players can't say it, but I will. Tonight's crowd was very disappointing.
Joe Bowen, shots fired at the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That is...
I'm reading it now, too.
That is embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
For Leafs fans. Now, listen, there is a slight difference between, you know, a lot of people will be like, well, everyone was like, the Canucks crowd made the players cry and gave them goosebumps. The Leafs have been in the playoffs very consistently for the last, I don't know, decade or whatever it is. And the Canucks haven't. So we were always going to get that extra boost from the Canucks fans as the Canucks returned to the playoffs at Rogers Arena. But Toronto fans have consistently been some of the most quiet in the NHL.
I'll say it. There's a lot of Maple Leafs fans that don't like this Maple Leafs team, that don't like the guys on it, right?
Yeah, but do you think they're shelling out hundreds of dollars to go to the games?
There's that element of it for sure.
Like, but I think that rank has always been quite quiet.
I know, but I think collectively, part of it has to, like, all of it is kind of the same theme that it's got. Like, the team is a bunch of high paid, high end talent guys.
Mm-hmm. The core, yeah.
Right. What's been challenged about them? Their heart, their want, their desire.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The invisible man, Mitch Marner, in the playoffs. Like, he's a great $16 million a year player when he's in the regular season, but wait till he goes to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's reflective now in the fan base.
Even people that like them are probably a little apprehensive going into the playoffs because look what's happened the last
right.
Well, people will also look at the ticket prices in Toronto and say it's a lot of Bay Street finance guys that are in the, but I don't buy that. You know, those guys can still cheer. They can still be into it. There's a lot of Wall Street guys at the Rangers games, and they've got the good seats down there. And Madison Square Garden still tends to be a pretty loud and boisterous place. I don't know if it's anything about the acoustics in that arena, but I don't think I have ever watched a game in Toronto involving the Leafs, because the Raptors crowds have been pretty good at times. Watching the Leafs where I've been like, man, what a great crowd. And I can think of pretty much every other arena in the NHL when I can think of a game where I've been like, man, that crowd was great last night.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know what it is about that Leafs crowd, but whatever. Who cares?
Okay, so coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Adnan Virk. We're going to talk to Katie Strang. We're going to go around the sporting world, but there will be lots of Canucks playoff talk and lots of Stanley Cup playoff talk in general. A reminder that Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. Second hour coming up. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.